Good evening and welcome to the KRFP Evening Report for Wednesday, February 19th, 2025. I'm Lee Robertus in the news tonight. Idaho Senate passes $50 million private school tax credit bill and sends it to Governor Brad Little's desk for his signature. Idaho Senate passes bill to prevent high rental application fees. That bill was sponsored by a Democrat. House committee passes bill targeting public drag and burlesque performances. And Forest Service job cuts in Idaho go deep. We'll have details on those stories and more coming up on the KRFP Evening Report. And live in the KRFP studios in Moscow, Idaho, I'm Lee Robertus, and this is the KRFP Evening Report on KRFP Moscow Pullman. Idaho's teachers union has condemned the passage today of the $50 million tax credit bill from Republican Representative Wendy Horman of Idaho Falls that would give $5,000 tax credits to parents to send each of their children to private schools, including religious schools. The Senate today passed House Bill 93, sponsored in the Senate by Republican Lori Den Hartog of Meridian, by a 20-15 vote, sending it to the governor's desk. Idaho Education Association President Lane McAnally wrote, in a news release, the bill is a huge step backwards for Idaho students and public schools. McAnally went on to say, this bill was not done the Idaho way, as Governor Brad Little called for during his State of the State address. Instead, lawmakers gave Idahoans legislation cut and pasted from other states by out-of-state lobbyists backed by billionaires who want to plunder Idaho's public school budget for their own profit. The Idaho Education News reported constituent emails to legislators obtained through a public records request were running 10-1 against the bill. One constituent wrote, instead of using public funds to subsidize private schools, I urge the legislature to invest in strengthening our public education system, ensuring equitable funding for teacher salaries, classroom resources, and support services will have a far greater impact on improving outcomes for all Idaho students. Governor Brad Little has not said if he supports the bill, but he did say during his State of the State address last month he would support a $50 million private school funding bill if it's, quote, fair, responsible, transparent, and accountable, and does not harm public schools. President Trump, who is not known for being fair and who is implementing the Heritage Foundation's Project 2025, a plan for the religious right takeover of the U.S. government, weighed in on the bill this week, writing a post Monday which said, this bill, which has my complete and total support, must pass. The words must pass were in all caps. The bill is widely known as a school choice bill, but sponsors have admitted Idaho already has school choice. Bill sponsor Senator Lori Den Hartog of Meridian addressed that issue when opening debate on the Senate floor today.
I think it's important to consider that while we have these options, not all of them work for all students. And what we're talking about today is not trying to recreate the exact same system that we have. We're trying to do something different, and that's part of why we have considerations of different metrics. A moment before I get into the mechanics, this floor knows, and you guys are probably tired of hearing me say it, but I'll say it again for the benefit of this floor and for the public. My husband and I made a decision over 14 years ago to send our children to a Christian school. That has come with many sacrifices, and it has come with much joy. But part of the reason was we were looking for an alignment that what we taught in our home was also taught in school and was what our kids heard when they joined our family for worship on Sundays. That's not a choice everybody makes. And what I've committed to this body and committed in other settings in the legislature is that this piece of legislation is not for the benefit of me and my children. I've committed to the body before on policy proposals that we've considered that I will not be applying for this if it passes. And I think that's important for this body to know. I'm not here for my kids. I'm here for the other kids of Idaho and the other families who are looking for options and opportunities.
That was Republican Senator Lori Den Hartog of Meridian speaking on the Idaho Senate floor today. Opponents have argued the bill will only help wealthy Idaho families who already send their children to private schools because the $5,000 tax credits are not enough to cover tuition at private schools. They also argue the bill is unfair to rural parents because Idaho's private schools are concentrated in urban areas. Democratic Senator Janie Ward Engelking of Boise addressed these arguments and others when speaking on the Senate floor today.
I'm a native Idahoan and a product of rural schools. And I'm looking at this bill through the soul of an Idahoan and a teacher's heart. And I'm very troubled by a lot of things that I see in this bill. First, I believe there's a lack of transparency and accountability. Because this is housed underneath the tax commission, we will never know who received these credits, how the money was used, or if a child's academic progress was improved. If private schools get public money, they should not get to operate in the dark. And if you look at some of the handouts, and I know you got quite a few, but there's one that has a chart with some red X's on it. If you'll look at that, I want you to look at all the things that public schools and charter schools are required to do, and many of them this legislature put in place. And then look at what we expect from the private or home schools or religious schools. There's multiple layers of accountability for public schools and public charter schools. And they're put in place to ensure high levels of learning for all our children. Vouchers, tax credits, ESAs are not about expanding parental choice because it's the school that gets to choose, not the parents. On the other hand, public schools serve, help, and bless every child. No child is turned away. This integration is an essential part of the fabric of our communities. Teachers at public schools undergo background checks. They study how children learn. They implement best practices, monitor a student's progress, and report to parents and the State Board of Education. And public schools have been in existence for 145 years in Idaho, and they're enshrined in our Idaho Constitution. This is something we must fund. They are not pop-ups, startups, or micro-schools. They are the heart and soul of our communities. And I know it's been said today that this will not defund public schools. It won't impact other budgets in the state. But the reality is we can't afford a dual system of education. Currently in Idaho, we have more than $355 million in levies throughout the state. We have the latest report from the State Department of Education said that in 5 years, we're going to need $2.7 billion for our facilities. That's not to build new buildings. That's to take care of the deferred maintenance. And in addition to that, we are underfunding our schools by about $70 to $80 million in the cost for special education. Public and charter schools are forced to fill that gap, and they do it many times on the backs of property owners. And I also want to mention that this is When we think about funding education, we have to look at what the Constitution says, the Idaho Constitution, and it says adequate and uniform and thorough. We don't have that yet. We can't afford to take on private religious schools at this point. When we see what's happened in other states, and there are a lot of them, Florida, Indiana, Arizona, not only have these states' budgets ballooned and critical areas have been reduced, like infrastructure, water projects in those states, but there's also been a lot of fraud and exploitation. Some of the reports I have say that five people were recently indicted for stealing $600,000 by creating fake children with forged birth certificates. We had over $1 million in taxpayer money was used to buy Legos and other non-educational items. Two individuals were charged for falsely claiming that they had 43 non-existent children. This is a problem that we don't need to take on right now. We've seen reports where educational expenses included a field trip to New York City to see plays, Washington, D.C. trips to study the Capitol, trampolines, paddle boards, ski trips for physical education. While these might all be wonderful, I don't think it's appropriate for us to be using tax dollars in this way. This bill isn't about school choice. It is simply cutting a blank check for a certain few using taxpayer dollars. No business would hand out millions of dollars without accountability. Why should the state? I'm asking you to vote no on House Bill 93. This bill is not good for Idaho, and it's not good for children.
That was Democratic Senator Janie Ward Engelking of Boise speaking on the Senate floor today. The vote to send House Bill 93 to the governor was 20-15. 9 Republicans and 6 Democrats voted against the bill. The Idaho House today passed the Medicaid Expansion Reform or Repeal Bill by a vote of 38-32. House Bill 138 from Republican Representative Jordan Redman of Coeur d'Alene would repeal Medicaid expansion if a long list of requirements are not met by July 1, 2026. Although Redman told the House Health and Welfare Committee earlier this month the bill was a safeguard approach which would strengthen Idaho's Medicaid program while maintaining flexibility, some are concerned the bill's rules will be impossible to meet. Redman introduced essentially the same bill last year, but it never made it out of committee for the same reason. About 89,300 Idahoans are on expanded Medicaid. Redman's bill would require enrollment in expanded Medicaid be capped at 50,000, which would mean the remaining 40,000 or so recipients would lose their coverage. His bill also adds work requirements and a 36-month lifetime limit for Medicaid expansion benefits and includes presumptive Medicaid coverage in hospitals for pregnant women and children. Voters passed Reclaim Idaho's Medicaid expansion initiative in 2018 with nearly 61% of the vote. Since then, polls have showed that expanded Medicaid is even more popular, with 73% saying they were in favor of it. Since then, right-wing legislators have tried to reverse the Medicaid expansion, putting sideboards on it, and tried to make the initiative process more difficult. Republican Representative Ben Furman of Shelley told lawmakers on the House floor today, "This bill is designed to repeal Medicaid expansion, no matter the intentions, and I just don't know how we can do that right now with all these unknowns." The bill now heads to the Senate side. You're listening to the KRFP Evening Report. This is KRFP Moscow Pullman.
KRFP thanks its listeners and sponsors, including Tie-Dye Everything, with locally made tie-dyed items, incense, and other accessories. Tie-Dye Everything is located near 6th Street at 527 South Main Street in Moscow. For more information, you can find Tie-Dye Everything at tiedye-everything.com.
With the nationalists of the Christian flavor signed at the bottom of the Trump ticket, many were left wondering, where did you come from? We'd always bickered about the relationship, but never thought the unit of state and church would give birth to this.
In 2024, two separate podcast producers launched two separate podcasts that cumulatively are the best and most important investigative reporting on Moscow, Idaho ever. KRFP is playing one of them.
In Moscow, where we've been working at building a Christian community for decades, the demeanor is 180 degrees out from that. We have happy families. It's characterized by psalm singing. It's characterized by feasting, by joy, by Sabbath dinners, by exuberant worship on the Lord's Day.
All those stores being bought up, all that real estate Christ Church and her members are taking control of, all those psalm sings during COVID breaking government mandates, all those happy wives under the subjugation of their husbands, that's a joyous community. Singing and eating and being merry with one another. Council meetings interrupted, zoning laws complained about, Facebook groups devoted to naming Kirker businesses so that money isn't funneled into their building projects. This all sounds like Moscow loves Christ Church.
Sons of Patriarchy is now a radio show, Saturdays at 2 p.m. Additional episodes Tuesday nights at 11. KRFP 90.3 FM, the friend of the people. This week only, we'll repeat episode 1 Thursday night at 9:30 on February 20th.
Don't run water unless you're using it.
The average American uses 143 gallons a day. You can save more water if you only flush the toilet when you go number two.
Another easy way to save water is by putting a brick in your toilet tank. This makes it so less water is used to flush.
Turn water off while washing your hair in the shower. This is up to 150 gallons of water a month.
Just think!
If you can do all these things in your home, you would make a difference by saving water in our Moscow community.
Asa,
Cassidy,
Lillian,
at Palouse Prairie School.
The Idaho House State Affairs Committee today passed a bill that would define drag shows as sexual exhibitions and would enable parents or guardians of minors to file lawsuits for at least $5,000 if they feel their children were exposed to, quote, sexual conduct. Republican Representative Ted Hill of Eagle sponsored the bill, along with Edward Clark of the Idaho Family Policy Center, a Christian nationalist group which is working for a religious takeover of all aspects of state government.
House Bill 230 creates a duty of care for organizers, hosts, and performers of indecent sexual exhibitions to take reasonable steps to restrict the access of minors. House Bill 230 operates as a constitutionally permissible time, place, and manner regulation. Adults can still host, organize, and perform indecent sexual exhibitions so long as they check IDs at the door. This legislation aims to address the negative secondary effects on society of exposing children to indecent sexual conduct. These effects include juvenile delinquency, sexual violence, sexual deviancy, higher divorce rates, and impaired moral and ethical development. House 230 is about restricting the access of children, like my 8-year-old boy, to indecent sexual performances. This is the same standard that is used for daytime broadcast television. If it's not appropriate for kids to see on television, it's not appropriate for them to see in a live performance. I'm going to defer to Mr. Edward Clark of the Idaho Family Policy Center to get into the constitutional details.
Okay. We'll let Mr. Clark walk us through the bill. We'll give him a couple minutes to do that. And then, Representative, if there's questions from the committee, I'll have you come back up or Mr. Clark, whoever, and answer those questions. So,
yes, sir, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Clark.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Edward Clark, and I serve as the policy assistant at Idaho Family Policy Center. It's an honor to be before you today discussing this important piece of legislation. And with that, let's get right into it. As Representative Hill mentioned, House Bill 230 utilizes the same indecency standard as the Federal Communications Commission has employed for the past 70 years or so. And there are two major elements to that standard. The first is that it contains sexual conduct. And the second is that the conduct would be patently offensive to an average person applying contemporary community standards with regards to what is appropriate for minor children. Now, it's important to note that both of these elements, both the sexual conduct and the patently offensive element, must be met in order for performance to fall within the scope of this legislation. Now, I'd also like to highlight that in order to be liable under the provisions of this bill, a person or entity must be aware that the performance they are hosting or organizing contains indecent sexual conduct. So let's say there's an example where there's a rogue performer or a crazy runaway improv team that engages in indecent sexual conduct that the hosts or organizers were not aware of before the fact. In this situation, the hosts and organizers would not be held liable under this bill. The next thing that I want to discuss is the fact that when we were in the drafting process and prior to introducing this bill, we met with several of the stakeholders in this legislation to really see if they had any concerns or thoughts about this bill. And after those discussions, we decided to make a couple of changes to the language of the bill to really clarify what our intent is and what we're trying to accomplish through this bill and to really mitigate any unintended consequences. So, if you'd turn with me to page 4 of the legislation, I'll walk through some of those changes with you really quickly. So, starting on page 4, down at line 13, we have an affirmative defense that if the defendant is a host, if such host is able to produce a legally enforceable contract signed by the event organizers, performers, or an authorized agent working on behalf of the event organizers or performers, when such contract stipulates that performers at the event shall not engage in an exhibition, show, or performance that violates the requirements of this bill. So essentially what it's saying here is that if somebody is providing a facility for a performance and they have a contract in place saying that there will not be any indecent sexual exhibitions taking place at this location and those exhibitions take place, then the host will not be liable. This allows many performing arts centers and even BSU's Morrison Center to have those types of contracts in place to relieve themselves of liability under this bill. Now, the next change that we made is further down on page 4, looking at line 30, where we say it shall be, line 20. The parent or legal guardian of the minor, 14 years of age or older, may accompany such minor to a ticketed show, exhibition, or performance, or provide prior written consent for such minor to attend a ticketed show, exhibition, or performance in the company of a designated adult.
That was Edward Clark of the Idaho Family Policy Center, preceded by Republican Representative Ted Hill of Eagle. The House State Affairs Committee took testimony on the bill for more than an hour. Here's some excerpts.
My name is Paul Luer, and I'm a pastor at the Well Reformed Church here in Boise. I'm here today to encourage you to protect the innocence of Idaho children who are powerless to protect or advocate for themselves. Sadly, some will assert that this bill treads on parental rights, but the right of a parent or any third party for that matter to sexualize a child simply does not exist. A father has no right to give his son pornography. The link between early sexualization of children and mental health, in addition to just being plain obvious, has been observed and established in study after study. Others will no doubt gaslight you by suggesting that by adding two words in front of drag shows, you will ignore the fundamentally abusive nature of exposing children to such acts. Those two words are family friendly. But family friendly drag shows are no more safe than child safe strychnine. The fact that some are commercializing such abuse or take pleasure in perpetrating such abuse does not change the fact that subjecting Idaho children to such acts is to rob them of their precious innocence. And so I urge you to fulfill your mandate as lawmakers and take a stand to protect the innocence of Idaho children by giving this House Bill 230 your full and unwavering support.
I would like to start by saying that at the end of this bill, after you call what we do sexual exhibitions not suitable for minors, you include a clause that allows secondary school children to perform the way we do in public so adults can see children do these, quote, dances or gestures. You think it's inappropriate for adults to dance with accessories that exaggerate male or female primary or secondary characteristics, but you think it's okay for children to do these dances for adults, and even took the time to put a special clause in this bill for it. If it's so bad what we do, why are we putting a special clause to allow children to do it? I am a drag king. I have been for several years. I am also a mother. I performed in multiple all-ages drag events in multiple states. I wear pretty much what I am wearing right now. Is it offensive to you for a woman to wear pants? Also, the secondary characteristics, I have worn a male silicone chest while performing as He-Man. Is He-Man inappropriate for children? The reality is that Bill hasn't changed much since last time. You are still going after our accessories that exaggerate primary and secondary sex characteristics. And like I mentioned last time, that does include things like bras or even male ballet pants, which would profoundly affect the arts in Idaho and cause many artists to not to be able to perform in public here. But ultimately, I don't believe that you understand how drag works. It is a broad spectrum. Women perform as women. Men perform as men. Some of our most popular drag queens are assigned female at birth. Are we going to sue them for wearing clothes that they would be allowed to wear pretty much in any other place? And in my case, I am literally wearing pants. How are you going to approach that? A woman wearing pants while dancing. Absolutely scandalous.
Five people testified against Representative Hill's bill targeting drag performances, and three testified in favor. Democratic Representatives Brooke Green of Boise and Todd Achilles of Boise, who were the only no votes in the committee, said they were concerned about the bill's stated intention to allow people to seek injunctive relief if they have reason to believe someone or an institution, quote, is about to violate, unquote, the bill's requirements. All Republicans on the committee voted in favor. The bill, House Bill 138, now heads to the House floor.
Saturdays at 5:30 p.m.
But I like to shoot small game. Ducks, rabbits, squirrels, especially ducks.
Meet Ducks and Pipes.
That's where you got the name, Ducks.
How did you receive the name Pipes?
My business, installing background music.
Ducks and Pipes are two characters in the 11-part ZBS radio play Saratoga Springs, a radio play where the sounds come alive.
I'm replacing everything with small animals.
Saratoga Springs in all its stereophonic glory.
You're going to have stuffed ducks.
Oh, yes, of course.
Ducks and Pipes live in a world where modern sound design is of the utmost importance.
Pipes, I want to create an environment for our banking clientele that reflects the feeling of the Adirondacks, the bubbling brooks, the wind in the pines, the dry leaves of autumn rustling in the birches,
the mist rising off the lake,
chirping birds,
honking of geese,
katydid,
call of the loon,
and music.
Yeah, with music.
Saratoga Springs, an 11-part radio adventure from ZBS, Saturday at 5:30 p.m. Another amazing cultural offering from the station that builds community.
The Idaho Senate today passed a bill designed to prevent collusion between landlords and also designed to prevent usurious application fees for people who are looking for a place to live. The bill was sponsored by Democrat Ali Rabe of Boise.
This bill came out of conversations with a couple of the largest landlord associations in Idaho, including the Idaho Apartment Association, as well as the National Association of Residential Property Managers, who came to me with this idea and helped draft the language. This includes hundreds of businesses. I have here 20 pages of the businesses that are a part of these associations, and then the support letters from the two associations that were involved are on your desks. I say that because I know many of you, and many of us don't like telling businesses what to do, but the businesses are coming to us asking us to codify what they are already doing in terms of codifying best practices and trying to professionalize their industry and kind of rein in the bad actors to improve the reputation of their industry. The guideposts provided here, I have not talked to a single landlord where this changes what good and responsible landlords are already doing. So it simply allows people a remedy when there are bad actors. As you all know, the rental market is very competitive right now. The cost of rent has increased by 50% just over the last several years. And Idaho is now considered one of the least affordable housing markets in the United States. That means that getting into a rental is highly competitive and very challenging. In speaking with nonprofits from across the state of Idaho, abuse of rental application fees has cited as one of the biggest challenges that their clients, veterans, seniors, young people, single moms, are dealing with. It's one of the top recognized issues with exploitation and consumer protection by nonprofits in Idaho. So what this bill does, it's really trying to codify best practices, but also protect consumers and renters as consumers, which are 30% of Idahoans. And I'll give you some examples of that exploitation so you can understand why this protection is needed. So I've heard from hundreds of Idahoans across the state who've had issues with this. Some who have been charged a $240 application fee. We've heard as high as a $427 flat application fee. $100 is noted as the average fee. And this is for every single rental that someone has to apply for. And often they're having to apply to a dozen rentals just to find a new place to live. So that really adds up. People have also noticed situations where they'll apply for a rental, immediately get denied. And then for whatever reason it is, maybe the landlord doesn't accept people with children or under a 600 credit score. And then they'll immediately get denied for that reason, and there's no remedy currently for them to get their money back. There's also been a lot of situations cited where a rental will apply for a unit. They'll immediately hear back, sorry, the vacancy is already filled. They just paid $100. There's no possibility for them to get their money back currently. With the lack of guidance that we have in our code here. And then tenants have also noted in those situations, they'll see that post stay up on Craigslist or wherever for 3-4 weeks. In the meantime, that landlord is still collecting fees from folks while the unit is not available. So really getting at transparency here and also just making sure that those units are available with some exceptions when fees are charged. I want to tell one personal story. I have many that I've heard in my career, but one in particular stands out of a young family that was living in a mobile home park where I live in Garden City. They four kids, two parents. The mom was stay at home, homeschooling. The dad worked in construction. And essentially, their rent was increased by $300. There was a change in ownership of the trailer park, which is very common in Idaho. They couldn't afford that $300 rent increase, so they tried to move. They applied to dozens of places. They told me over 20 places. They had paid over $1,000 in application fees and had not heard a single response back. By the time they got to the end of that month, they couldn't afford that $300 increase, but they had used up most of their savings paying application fees. So they got evicted. They ended up in eviction court simply because they couldn't afford that $300 increase. They could have afforded it if they hadn't spent all their money on application fees. And here they were, two parents, four children, about to lose a roof over their heads because of abuse of this practice.
That was Democratic Senator Ali Rabe of Boise debating on the Senate floor today. The Rental Housing Affordability Bill that she sponsored passed the Senate 23-12. All 12 of the no votes were from Republicans. One of those who voted against the bill was Senator Dan Forman of Moscow.
This bill, although well-intended, in my opinion, represents overreach by government. It's the government stepping into the private sector and telling private business owners who have invested their own time, their own labor, their own effort, their own money into running a business, how to run that business. It puts restrictions on those property owners, those landlords, in how they function day to day as they carry out the demands of their business. Things like fees should be set by the free market, not by the government, not by Idaho code. Contract law exists, and it's designed to deal with situations like landlord-tenant agreements. So I think we need to ask ourselves, where do we draw the line on government interference or overreach? And is this government interference and or overreach? I believe it is. I think we need to allow business owners to run their businesses as they see fit, certainly with certain limitations in the interest of fairness. But again, that's a matter for the courts to decide.
That was Republican Senator Dan Forman of Moscow. The bill now heads to the House side. You're listening to the KRFP Evening Report on KRFP Moscow Pullman.
Last year, Montana voters safeguarded the right to abortion in the state's constitution, but they also elected two new justices to the state's high court who could have the final word. According to reporting from KFF Health News, of the 10 states where abortion rights were on the November ballot, voters in seven expanded them. But state Supreme Court races were supercharged on the topic. In Montana, one new justice ran as a judicial conservative. Martha Fuller of Planned Parenthood Advocates of Montana says, "We don't yet know how the other will interpret the constitutional change.
We're still waiting to see, once that language is incorporated into the Montana Constitution, how the courts interpret that. It's pretty clear cut, but there will be suits that seek to get clarification on it."
At least eight cases are pending in Montana courts challenging state laws to restrict abortion access, any of which could end up at the state Supreme Court. Eight bills regarding abortion have been introduced this legislative session. In many states, including Montana, judicial elections are nonpartisan, but political parties and groups lobby for candidates. Republican lawmakers have proposed dozens of bills to reshape judicial power, including Senate Bill 42, which passed the Senate Judiciary Committee earlier this month and would make judicial elections partisan. Justice Jim Nelson retired in 2012 after sitting on the Montana Supreme Court for two decades.
"If the court is stacked with judges committed to a partisan philosophy, you're going in with cards stacked against you. And Montana voters don't want that. They never wanted that."
Nonpartisan elections tend to buck broader electoral trends, as in Michigan, where voters elected two judicial candidates backed by Democrats, even though President Donald Trump won the state and Republicans took control of the state House. This story was produced with original reporting from Catherine Houghton and Bram Sable-Smith for KFF Health News. I'm Kathleen Shannon with Big Sky Connection.
New legislation that would ensure every Oregon public school student has access to free breakfast and lunch has widespread bipartisan support. A recent poll shows more than 80% of Oregon voters support the bill. Currently, one in six children in Oregon is facing hunger and food insecurity. Avin S. is a junior at Lake Oswego High School and an organizer with the School Meals for All Coalition. She says while her school doesn't qualify for universal school meals, she still notices that some of her classmates might not have enough food during the day.
"As a student, I know firsthand how important food is to academic success. No one can learn on an empty stomach, and it's difficult to focus when your stomach is growling."
While most public schools in Oregon already provide free breakfast and lunch to all students, the bill would extend those meals to tens of thousands who still go without. David Wieland with Partners for a Hunger-Free Oregon says the program especially benefits low-income students who can face stigma and bullying for receiving free meals. He points to research showing that when meals are free for all students, suspension rates drop. Wieland adds this bill is the conclusion of decades of advocacy work, and the funds are already in place to make it happen.
"We're not going to say that kids have to pay for their textbooks or have to pay to take the bus. Why would we do the same with the basic food that they need to function during the school day.
Data from Oregon State University shows that hunger rates in the state have risen significantly in recent years, with an additional 65,000 people facing food insecurity each year. The data also shows that communities of color in Oregon experience hunger at twice the rate of white residents. The coalition says School Meals for All saves families around $1,400 annually per student. The bill is currently in the Oregon House Education Committee. I'm Isabel Charlet, Oregon News Service.
There is no public tally of the number of federal employees who have lost their jobs so far as Elon Musk's Department of Government Efficiency takes the axe to federal spending and cuts jobs. Forest Service employees in Idaho say they are losing up to 40% of their staff. Patrick Shea, who is a member of the National Federation of Federal Employees, says his job site, where he worked as a river ranger in the Hells Canyon National Recreation Area near Riggins, has lost 40% of its staff. Shea told the Spokesman Review the impact of this gross reduction in force will devastate national forests for years to come. The toilets are going to be clogged. Toilet paper will not be stocked. Trails will be closed. Water samples will not be collected at campgrounds to make sure they're tested and safe from certain bacteria. We call in fires when we see them. Fires will not be called in. Most of the employees who received emails saying they were out of the job said they had poor job performance, and that's why they were being fired, despite having glowing reviews from their supervisors. Payette National Forest fill-in firefighter and backcountry ranger Bryce Spare said he replied to the email, copying his job performance review, but said it's not going to help. He estimates that 45 employees were terminated on the Payette National Forest in recent weeks. He says in the recreation sector of the Payette, 5 people kept their jobs after the nationwide cuts. He said there must be 20 employees to maintain the 1,600 miles of trails in the Payette National Forest, not 5. Spare also said only one person remains in the Recreation Department in the McCall and New Meadows District of the Forest. He said it's all of the local popular trails around McCall down to the river, that whole area going to council. That whole area has one person now. We can't do trail work with one person. Well, that's it for the KRFP Evening Report for tonight. Taking a look at the weather forecast for the Moscow-Pullman area. 80% chance of precipitation tonight. Rain before 9 p.m., then a chance of snow after 4 a.m. Snow level 3,700 feet, lowering to 2,800 feet after midnight. Steady temperature 34. Southeast winds 5 to 10, becoming southwest in the evening. Gusts up to 20 miles per hour. Little or no snow accumulation expected. 30% chance of snow tomorrow, mainly before 8 a.m., partly sunny, high 36, southwest winds 5 to 10, gusts up to 20, little or no snow accumulation expected, mostly cloudy Thursday night, low 24, calm wind becoming southeast at 5, with gusts up to 20, partly sunny on Friday, high 37. Current temperature is 34 degrees. If you want to help KRFP keep newscasts like this on the air, plus the newscasts you hear during Morning Mix, the recordings of local events and the public affairs shows, plus the music and arts programming you hear every day on KRFP. Be sure to become a member of KRFP. Memberships are $35 a year, $20 for students and low income. You can mail your memberships to KRFP, 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843. Or you can go to the KRFP website. Find out more ways to help KRFP. There's a drop-down box that says Support KRFP. You can underwrite programming, which is a cost-effective way of letting our listeners know your business supports community radio. You can adopt a DJ. There's a PayPal option. And there's also a Patreon button as well. Once again, we'll gladly accept checks of any amount at KRFP, 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843. I'm Lee Robartis. Have a good night. This is KRFP Moscow Pullman. Flashpoints coming up next. Lockdown Mosh Pits on at 7:30. Music begins in earnest with Grateful Dead Through the Decades at 8:30 p.m. with Arlene, and more music of the future is on the air with Aiden at 10 p.m. tonight. So stay tuned for more entertainment information and music throughout your evening at KRFP Moscow Pullman.
KRFP thanks its listeners and supporters, including the Palouse Folklore Society, celebrating traditional music and dance on the Palouse since 1982. The Palouse Folklore Society sponsors concerts, jam sessions, and a monthly contra dance. Find out more at palousefolk.org or on Facebook.